Welcome to Ampersound, a podcast brought to you by the team at Visualist. Ampersound features snippets from our interactive digital magazine, Ampersand. Every episode, we speak to multi-hyphenates who have captivated our minds. We ask them about their code switching, routines, and mindsets. For the full stories, check out ampersand-mag.com. That's ampersand-mag.com. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Today, I'm joined by Ed Curry and Andy Coxon, two performers turned entrepreneurs with interests spanning photography, teaching, acting, and dance. We discuss their transition from the West End to the world of business, the resilience of performers, and how they were born to perform. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the stories. So, Andy, I want to talk about your background first, and then we'll get back to Ed, if that's okay. So, you're still in the theatre industry, are you?
I've just stopped this last month. I've just done my last performance. I did a three-month contract over winter, and that was my swan song, if you like, because the business that we'll get onto in a moment has now taken up full-time priority, and it's going so well, and we love it so much that I think mental health-wise, I just couldn't balance the two. Mm-hmm. And because of what I have achieved over the last 12 years as a performer is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why I can't go back to it when I'm a bit older. But for what I've done, I'm extremely pleased with what I achieved.
Congratulations. That sounds amazing. Yeah.
Thanks.
So how did it all begin with you getting into acting and the theatre world? I know you trained professionally, and I think your first role was in a play by Andrew Lloyd Webber, if I remember correctly.
Yes, my very first professional performing job was in Evita, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Evita, the UK and European tour, and that's going back about 11 years now. Woo! Yeah, so I started about 13 back in Derby in the middle of the UK. Doing Amdram, and I knew I wanted to be a performer, so I trained, moved to London, trained, got an agent, started auditioning, took about a year to get my first job, 9 months to a year to get the first job after lots of rejection, and then roles kind of snowballed. My career kept going, and obviously lots of rejection in between still. It wasn't easy, but a good one or two contracts a year, which not everyone does. I've had some excellent roles. I played Tony in West Side Story. I was in the Les Mis movie with Hugh Jackman. Rocky Horror. What else have I done? Sister Act. I've done some great, great jobs. So that's why I say I feel quite content to be able to go, okay, let's just shut that door for a minute.
Yeah.
While I focus on other things. Because you don't get any security as an actor. There's no consistency, there's no security in finance. So when Ed and I set out to make this brand to basically make money between performing, that's how it started initially, just to get a bit of cash in the bank, you know, always have a side hustle as a performer. And it's just snowballed into something else and I know that it's going to set us up for life and have us have that real security that will allow us to do what we want with our lives. That's the whole purpose of why anyone works. You work to live, right? So why not do it with something that you love doing?
Amazing. So Andy, you mentioned that you knew you wanted to perform for a young age. Ed, what about you? Did you always know that you wanted to be a performer?
Yeah, always. As a little kid, you know, recreating all the Disney shows with my sisters, doing dance routines to Naked by Louise as a as a bluebird for the opening of Cinderella, or sticking a skirt on my head and being a princess. Lots of that as a kid, and then the same kind of route. I did amateur dramatics at home. I'm from Battlefield in the northwest of England, and then went to drama school. I went to a place called Arts Ed in London. Agent, got my first show in Top Hat straight out of college, and then other bits, but I kind of departed from the theatre in a different way to Andy. Like, Andy was very content. Whereas me, I kind of fell out of love with performing. I didn't enjoy it as a lifestyle because of, you know, there's no safety net for you. You're not treated very well. Going from job to job is really difficult. There's not any sort of security in what you do. And although I loved, like, my favorite bit about it was doing warm up before a show. You get to see all your friends every day. You have your gossip while you're doing your stretches and your vocal exercises. And, but then kind of doing the same thing every night, it just wasn't for me. I always say it's really interesting that creative people go into performing, like musical theatre, but as soon as you're in a show, like, there's no creativity anymore. You're stuck doing the same thing every night. Look at that light, stand on that number, say your line this way. And for me, I just kind of, yeah, fell out of love with it. So I'm bitter, he's better.
It's interesting. You hear people say, don't make a career out of what you love. What's your take on that, both of you?
I'm glad I did it. Like, I can now say, like, I achieved my dream. Do you know what I mean? My dream is always to be in a West End show playing a part. And I've done it twice. And so for me, it was like a big tick. Like, now I need something more. I need to move on to something else. So I wouldn't change my history.
I don't really have feelings towards that saying, because I think you always want something else when you've got something that you think is your dream. So if you turn your hobby into your career, you'll always then find something else because you've reached a goal. And it's like people like Beyonce surely can't sit there and go, great, I've done everything, I'm happy. She'll do perfume, she'll do acting. Do you know what I mean? Everyone that has a drive or a focus or a dream will do what they can to get to it. And if it sidelines or goes elsewhere, then you just follow it and you'll get to where you're meant to be.
That's it. Life happens, doesn't it? Like, you go into something expecting one thing, but there's so many other avenues that present themselves to you. And I remember when people used to come into drama school to talk to us about, you know, what's going to happen beyond drama school. And one of the guys that came in, he was like, if five of you are still doing this in 5 years' time, that would be amazing. And if one of you is still doing this in 10 years' time, that would be amazing. And all of us were like, no, we're all going to be stars in the West End. We're all going to do it. And we're going to do that for the rest of our lives. But the reality is, something else takes your interest. Or another job presents itself to you, or you fall in love with somebody, or you move to a different country. And so life just happens and you go with the flow, right?
Obviously, the pandemic hit and the world stopped and the theatre industry lost everything. So many people throughout that nearly 2 year period that we're still kind of in have really assessed the situation as to whether they want to continue, whether they've got the gumption to carry on with it, because it's hard at the best of times, let alone when the industry itself is on its knees. So that's why I've taken the decision to step back, having something else, because right now you really have to want to be in it, because it's not easy. There's cuts left, right, and centre. Audience numbers are dwindling because people are scared to go still. It's on the up. It really is. And I think people really need to look after their mental health for that exact reason and make a decision. There's no wrong in stopping or pausing or taking a different route and finding your own creativity elsewhere. You'll never lose that creativity. You just channel it into something else, whether that's building a website, being a photographer, teaching people. I've done all those things and I still continue to do it all. And I love it. I do. Just remain creative. I always will. And like I say, I always see myself as being an actor when I'm 60 years old. So who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
The door isn't closed. It's just ajar.
No. It's just a job. Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that lots of performers and people in the acting and theatre industry always have side hustles. So I want to rewind and talk about ACT. How it started was really, I think it was Ed, you were trying to solve a problem that you were having, and then it kind of grew and grew and grew. So do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, exactly that. So we met when we were in a show together in 2015. We were doing Beautiful, the Carole King musical at the Old Witch Theatre, and we shared a dressing room 10 on the fifth floor. And I guess it was there. Like, I always knew like sweat was an issue for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a natural thing, but it was an issue. Like, I used to get so embarrassed going to restaurants or meeting friends. I'd be under the hand dryer before meeting anybody, and I would have put deodorant on, but I'd still smell, or my t-shirts would have those horrible like claggy yellow stains in them from antiperspirant. And so I was just trying everything and getting so frustrated with it that I was like, I'm just going to figure out how to do it myself. Surely there's a way.
What gave you the bravery to go figure it out? Surely you must have thought there must be something out there that addresses this.
Well, yeah, I don't really know what the spark was. I was very inspired by my sister. She's got her own company. I was like, well, if she can run a company, I can bloody run a company. But even then, I suppose it wasn't about me running a company. It was about just figuring out this recipe. I met this chap once on a cruise ship randomly, and I was complaining to him about how I was smelling after I'd had a workout. And he was like, oh, yeah, well, I make my own deodorant. And I was like, what? Like, you make your own deodorant? He sent me the recipe for what he does, and I tried it, and I didn't smell in the same way that I normally would. I got a massive rash, but I didn't smell. I was like, well, there's something in this. Like, okay, what is it about these ingredients that are working? And so I just, like, every week I'd be researching online different ingredients. I'd buy them in, mix them up on the hob in the kitchen, buy some test tubes, get some beakers. And Andy was living with me at the time. So I'd hand him a pot of something that I'd made and be like, try this. What do you think? Write down the results in a notepad. Think about how I'd tweak it. Yeah, some of them were gross, like slime. But I just knew there was something in it because it had helped me more than anything that was on the market. I was like, why is this not out there? Yes. Why has nobody else done this? It was honestly just, once I found something that was starting to work, I took more of an interest in it. And I was like, this is like super interesting. So just kind of.
It was never a plan to sell it, was it? It was never a plan to like make the business from it. It was just purely, I'm going to make something that works for himself. And I was just like, great, keep going with it. I'll try it. You have something. It was never to make a brand or a product or a business. It was just kind of your own issue that needed fixing.
Was there a point where you realized that, my goodness, this could actually become something bigger than just something you do on weekends, something you make on weekends or at nights?
Yeah, it was.
It just, whenever you remember this story, I find it hilarious that we went to see a play that my friend was in with Caroline Quentin. I don't know if you know her from Men Behaving Badly, the sitcom. She was in the play, and her husband is a cosmetic formulator. So we went for drinks after the show, and we met Caroline, and Caroline's husband was there. And I said, oh, Ed's just made a deodorant. And they went off in the corner having conversations for ages. And then he set us up with a mentor who basically was like, yeah, you should get this cosmetically tested, you know, to legally sell it, because we were just selling pots to friends. But if we wanted to actually sell it, you have to get it tested and EU standards and everything like that. And then we had a meeting. Oh, I had about six meetings with her. She was teaching us about labeling and packaging and how to fill it. And then she suggested getting a crowdfunding campaign done because we'd need a nice chunk of money to kick off the production. And we obviously thought, why don't we use our theatre community? So we gave hundreds of samples, gave them to every single West End performer, asked them to post about it on the same day, at the same time as we launched the campaign. So it was everywhere on social media. People already knew what it was because they'd loved it and tried it. And it just blew up, and we hit our target on day one of the Kickstarter campaign. And we went on to nearly triple the amount that we needed just in that 1 month. That's the point when we both kind of went, holy crap, we've got 3,000 orders that we need to fulfill. This is now, you know, we can't stay in the kitchen anymore. We've got to
Where were you making all of these? In your flat?
In the kitchen. In the hob. On the hob. In the kitchen. I've got pictures of Ed stirring a massive pot and little little tins laid out on the side and ladling them in. Putting them in the fridge to solidify.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's come a long way since then.
I'm sure it has. So how did you, Andy, get involved officially in the business, or in this, I guess, nascent idea that became a business after?
Yeah, so we were living together and Ed had stopped performing. Mm-hmm. And I was basically watching him lose his way in life. He had no idea what route to go down. You were exploring things like interior design. You were a Deliveroo driver at one point. You were trying so many things. I was watching you and knowing that we had a product that worked. And I've always had an interest in business myself. I did my own photography company and things like that. Mm. So I just said, why don't we together turn this into a business and make money from it? And that's when we thought, oh, well, maybe Etsy, maybe we could set up a little stall, you know, join some farmers markets and make some money, a couple of hundred quid here and there. That was the catalyst of, okay, yeah, fine, let's get a name, let's get the name trademarked. But to do that, you need money. Fine. We raised funds on the Kickstarter and I was involved then. Mm.
It's funny that, though, the brand was completely different back then. When we did a Kickstarter, it was all black and gold. It wasn't in tubes. It was called Pitt, like Brad Pitt back then. And it was actually on the day, like, we needed money to buy the trademark, to register the trademark. And it was on the day that we were about to click go, like send off the registration, that we got this letter through the door from a lawyer being like, you're using our client's name to trade. You have to cease and desist. You have to let us know how much stuff you've sold, how much product you've got. And we were like, well, we don't have anything yet. So instead of fighting this, we're just going to rebrand. And honestly, it was the best thing we could have done. We recruited an amazing agency, and we were kind of embarrassed about putting our story forward about being West End performers. We were like, nobody's going to take us seriously, like these two musical theatre boys starting a business. And it was the agency, they were like, no, this is your truth, this is what's exciting about the brand, you've got to promote that. So and it was created. ACT was the name. I remember them taking us through a presentation of all these different names of what we could call the brand, and ACT showed up on it, and me and Andy just did that little we knew there, and then we're like, oh my god, it's been staring us in the face this whole time. It's our careers, like, we are ACT. It's all got these cute theatre nuances running throughout everything. It's great, but it's nice, it feels authentic to us now. Instead of us trying to be sort of this premium different thing that we were doing.
Now we can just trying to be this premium thing initially?
I think we just, again, we were kind of embarrassed about our backgrounds and people taking us seriously.
There's also the side that there are natural deodorants in this format, in a balm. They do exist in farmers markets, in health stores, but they don't have the formulation that we have, and they don't have a reputation of you wanting to have it in your bathroom. We're an Instagram generation where we've grown up through this world and on our phones seeing these gorgeous products. And if you see something that looks phenomenal, you're sort of already halfway believing that it's amazing already. So that's half the journey. So then all you've got to do is get into someone's hand to try it. And then when they realize what magic it is, there is no deodorant doing that right now. There's no 100% plastic-free, recyclable, premium, natural deodorant at all. And we're filling that gap. When we get in people's hands, they love it.
I think for us, brand was super important for us as well. When we were designing everything, I always compare it to like putting on a show. Like, I know as performers, everyone has a recurring nightmare that you are pushed out on stage and you don't know your lyrics or your lines. You have to make it work. And that's everyone's sort of biggest anxiety as a performer. I still have nightmares about it and I haven't performed in 6 years. And so kind of creating the brand, it's the same thing. We never wanted to like half-ass it. We always knew that it's got to be a finished spectacle at the end of whatever we put out there. Like it's all carefully choreographed and directed, and the set, all the imagery that we want to put together, it's all got to tell this overarching story about who we are and what the product does and how it performs. So I think that's why it's done well. Like the brand has done really well because of our perfectionism, I suppose.
Yeah. Is there a way in which you feel that being a performer hasn't actually helped you, but has hindered you in maybe the way you're thinking about things or the skills that you feel like you are lacking?
Oh, from a personal perspective, like the sort of thinking that we're, what's it called when you think that you're not meant to be in a room? Imposter syndrome. Yeah, we get that all the time.
Okay.
Because it is bizarre. Like even now, I just went on this like business lunch, which for me is so bizarre, like having wine at lunch and somebody paying for you and you're talking about like D2C and B2B and fulfillment. It's still new to me. Like obviously we launched the brand in a pandemic, so our exposure to other business owners and people in a sort of commercial network, we haven't had that experience. We're still performers. A lot of our friends are still performers. Like, you know, we're in that creative world. So yeah, even now I'm like, oh my God, what am I talking about? I know what I'm talking about now. And every day, like it's a learning day, but sometimes I catch myself like, am I supposed to be talking like this? This is so bizarre. I still think of myself as a dancer by trade, but I'm not. Like, yes, I've been doing this for, well, since 2016 is when we first made that first pot. So I've learned a lot since then. So sometimes I need to remind myself that actually I know what I'm talking about.
Performers are also the most resilient people you'll ever meet because they have to make their rent. If your contract ends and you don't have another one to go to, you have to find things to do in that time, whether it's working in a bar, leafleting, teaching, photography. I've done all those things because I've just had to make a living. So any kind of any task that comes our way, when someone says to me, yeah, that'll be £13,000 for a photo shoot, I'm just like, what? Absolutely not. I'll pick up the camera and figure it out myself, because I've got that intuition of kind of figuring it out and learning. The biggest thing that I think Ed and I need to pat ourselves on the back for is how much we have how much we've learnt and how much we've made ourselves learn. Partly because we've had to, if we wanted to get to the stage we're currently at, but also because we wanted to. We wanted to know how to do these things so we can do it properly and run a brand that's going to have longevity and an audience that will remain with us. We're not just here for a hot second. We're going to be here for a long time.
I think it just goes to show like human capability. If you allow yourself to kind of just fall forwards, your legs are going to catch up with you. So for me, like 4 years ago, I'd never seen a spreadsheet in my life. But now I'm doing, you know, financial forecasts, financial modeling, cash flow forecasts, looking at stock replenishment, which 4 years ago, had you told me I'd be doing that, I'd be like, well, there's no way I can't do that. That's impossible. But you just have to. When you have a business, you have to figure it out. You have to learn. So I'm pretty skilled now at a spreadsheet. I love a spreadsheet.
Andy, you mentioned that you've done photography, you've done teaching, you've done various side hustles. Talk me through some of these.
There's been some real dark moments where you literally just take a job just because you need a bit of cash between acting jobs, particularly. Things like call centers. I was in a call center for cancer research, which was really hard. I've worked for a cocktail bar, and they were trying to make me learn all the recipes for 76 cocktails. And I was like, no, there's a manual. I'll just read them as I make them. I'm not learning them. I work here one day a week. And they were going to test they were going to test me. I was like, no, this isn't my career. I'm not, no, I'm out, left. What else have I done? Teaching, something I've always loved, but this is the first year of my life that I haven't taught. So I did a lot of singing teaching, acting teaching, drama school audition teaching, preparation for exams and things like that. So I've always loved that, but I lost the love a little bit, shall we say, because it's hard when the student's just been given to you almost like babysitting rather than because they want to be a performer. When you get those students, the ones that really want to do it, that's when it excites your inspiration as well. But yeah, photography is something I have always loved. I started our brand with all the photography in the flat, making it up as we went along. So it kicked us off nicely. Headshot photography, things like that. I love it. I still do it. I've just bought a load of new lights because I'm going to start learning to do more of our product photography and content for social media, for TikTok.
Are you still doing all of your content yourself?
Not all of it. A lot of the imagery is from design agencies we've been working with, but I've been art directing it with them, mostly because of time. If I had time, I would do it all myself. But to use photographers and people that have that creative eye is so, it's important to get an outsider's view as well. We don't want all of our campaigns or quarters of the year to look the same. We want to feel like the same brand, but we want to have an elevation each time or a different inspiration. So really still linking into that performance and the movement side, but different locations, different people, different styles.
Andy does all of the design work, like anything, all of the website Andy's designed, all of our emails Andy's designed, anytime you see any, all of our stories, he's done it all. Like,
wow.
All of that stuff, yeah. Those bits, yeah, the kind of graphics. The graphics stuff, yes. It's been obviously, we've been given the guidelines from our initial designers when we rebranded, so the typography and kind of the guidance on that. But since we took that off from them, it's been me doing everything, and I'm loving learning how to do it. I'm kicking off a TikTok a day this month.
Fortune.
Yes, I'm saving as a fortune, that's for sure. But I do love it. I would keep making imagery and photography and videography for hours a day. Yeah. I wouldn't class it as work sometimes, but sometimes you're too tired to do it because it's exhausting being a founder.
Indeed.
I've had some rotten jobs as outside of performing. My worst one probably was being dressed as a beer bottle, handing out leaflets. Clerkenwell. Only a few years ago. And I used to be a delivery person.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Madame Tussauds. Used to scare people in their scare attraction.
Oh, wow.
Done it all. Call centers, crying in the toilets. Like, oh my God, what is my life? And a lot of teaching as well.
That's why I say actors are the most resilient people. We'll do whatever we want, do whatever we need to get to where we want to be. And I think that's just a trait that will remain with us throughout our business career as well, because there's always ways of doing it than just reaching out to somebody else.
Ed, what are some of your other creative interests?
I love dance. That's kind of what I always wanted to do. So I'm trying that. I guess that's kind of, you know, part of the brand as well. Like, we have a lot of movement inspired. What I'd love to do one day is like choreograph one of our campaigns or something down the line. I used to like choreograph and direct shows and stuff. I'd love to do that again. Obviously, just I don't have time to do it.
There's so much creative scope that we have the authority to do with our branding and to utilize what we know and who we know. Is literally, we haven't even scratched the surface yet. So to be able to get the top West End dancers into a marketing campaign that Ed has choreographed and I've videoed is gold. Like, no one can do that without spending 120 grand at Burberry to do it for their latest spring collection. Do you know what I mean? So for us to be able to tap into who and what we know, I get shivers talking about it because it excites me so much. Yeah. I love it. I can't wait to be able to have the time to do it.
Everything's just about the theatre, Like, what theatricality, what the unboxing experience, how can we make that more sort of theatrical and memorable? How, when we show up in like a retail store, can we like, yeah, be the star of the show in that hall? Even, you know, put it under spotlight, put some dry ice over the products, or, you know, do a launch event with performers. And we were talking the other day about doing a cabaret to launch some of our new products, to like tell the story, bring out the products, bring out an accompanying cocktail, so that everybody, the audience, can like smell the fragrance, but hear the story that goes along with it, hear the song that goes along with it. We've got a lot of fun ideas that we'd love to do. We just need to get there.
There's a lot we can do, a lot we can do. That we've got so much scope, there's so much we can do, and there is so much excitement in what's coming. We just have to keep our ducks in a row and activate it all, basically. Activate it.